Welcome back to Sermons. This is episode 52, entitled A Plurality of Numbers. I thought that was kind of a good title, especially since we're beginning the book of Numbers. I put that off for a couple of episodes and went back to reconsider some of the events of Genesis. And I still have a few more thoughts to share about Genesis, about creation specifically, but for now, let's get started with Numbers chapter 1, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation, on the first day of the second month, in the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt, saying, Take ye the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel, after their families, by the house of their fathers, with the number of their names, every male, by their polls. From 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel, thou and Aaron shall number them by their armies. And with you there shall be a man of every tribe, every one head of the house of his fathers. Then it gives the names of all the current heads of the family for each tribe, other than the Levites, who were excluded from military service due to their priestly duties. And I'm going to skip over the list of names because I don't want to butcher them. So we'll skip ahead to verse 16. These were the renowned of the congregation, princes of the tribes of their fathers, heads of thousands in Israel. And Moses and Aaron took these men which are expressed by their names, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first day of the second month, and they declared their pedigrees after their families by the house of their fathers, according to the number of the names, from 20 years old and upward by their polls. Now, I kind of puzzled over this by their polls phrase. And I finally decided it must mean that each tribe polled the families that belonged to that tribe and totaled up the numbers that the families reported, you know, when they responded to the poll, which sounds reasonable. But frankly, I don't see where anything like that is said in the original Hebrew. So I don't know where they got that from. And most translations other than the King James don't say anything about such polls. Speaking of what is or isn't in the original Hebrew, the previous episode went back to Genesis to consider the creation story, especially the 6 days of creation in chapter 1, and I found a lot of errors in the King James Version, including a couple of glaring mistakes about whether certain nouns are singular or plural. In the first verse alone, there are two of these plurality of numbers mistakes. The King James begins, In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. But, you know, the Hebrew nouns for both God and heaven are plural rather than singular. So instead of God created the heaven, it should be God created the heavens. God created the heaven makes it sound like some all-powerful supreme being created a place for immortal souls to dwell. But the correct translation, God's created the heavens, does not imply they were supreme beings, just superior beings. And what they created was not heaven in the religious sense, but merely the skies above. And for that matter, creating the earth doesn't necessarily imply that they created planet Earth. But, you know, that has nothing to do with the singular versus plural issue. The main mistake is refusing to recognize that Elohim is plural. Elohim is the Hebrew word translated as God in English, as you well know. But anytime a noun has that im suffix attached, it's plural. Elohim means gods, not God. Just as Shamaim means heavens, not heaven. And you may say, oh, come on, that can't be right. Judaism is a monotheistic religion. There's only one God, Well, if there's only one God, why doesn't Elohim say in Genesis 1:26, let us make man in our image, after our likeness? And people will say, well, God was just talking to his angels. But, you know, when you think about it, doesn't that kind of imply that there's a group of lesser gods with one main God? Now, some people may say that God was using the so-called royal we, or the royal us in this case, but we are not amused by that. People see monotheism in the first chapter of Genesis because that's what they expect to see. Kind of like people see the Kimbaya airplanes as insects, despite the fact that they look a lot more like airplanes than insects. They expect them to be insects instead of airplanes because they believe insects existed when the Kimbaya artifacts were made, but airplanes didn't. Therefore, they can't represent airplanes. And they gaslight the people who see them as airplanes by saying it's pareidolia, you know, which is, you know, kind of like seeing a man in the moon or a face in a cloud or Jesus in a cracker. In other words, they're gaslighting you by saying it's all in your head, not theirs. But I think seeing these artifacts as insects is a prime example of pareidolia. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look up Kimbaya artifacts. It's Q-U-I-M-B-A-Y-A. You've probably seen guys wearing replicas of some of these on their lapels, especially if you've ever watched Ancient Aliens. But let's get back to the book of Numbers. We're up to verse 19 now, still talking about numbering the available fighting men in each tribe, apparently by polling the families in each tribe. So they're like doing a census or gathering selective service information. It's the draft board. As the Lord commanded Moses, so he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai. And the children of Reuben, Israel's eldest son, by their generations, after their families, by the house of their fathers, according to the number of the names, by their polls, every male from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war, those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Reuben, were 46,500. And then it goes on to give that same information for each of the 11 tribes, you know, all but the Levites, with the minimum being 32,000 and the maximum being 74,600. So I'm going to skip the next 23 verses and get to the bottom line of the spreadsheet. But remember, there's a controversy about whether Eliph, the Hebrew word translated here as thousand, really means thousand, or whether it might mean troops or chiefs or something like that. You may remember that I talked about this a little bit back in the Exodus episodes. These are those that were numbered, which Moses and Aaron numbered, and the princes of Israel, being 12 men, each one was for the house of his fathers. So were all those that were numbered of the children of Israel by the house of their fathers from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war in Israel. Even all they that were numbered were 600,000 and 3,550. Now that seems like a lot, which is why some people question whether Eliph means thousand or something else. But the Levites, after the tribe of their fathers, were not numbered among them. For the Lord had spoken unto Moses, saying, only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel. But thou shalt appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of testimony, and over all the vessels thereof, and over all things that belong to it. They shall bear the tabernacle and all the vessels thereof, and they shall minister unto it, and shall encamp round about the tabernacle. And when the tabernacle setteth forward, the Levites shall take it down, And when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up, and the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. Which seems kind of harsh, but apparently the Yahwehlians were paranoid, nervous anyway, about assassination attempts. We talked about that a little before. And apparently ever since the Ark of the Covenant's Ai had dealt harshly with Aaron's two sons, you know, the two that had offered strange fire, they hadn't had any trouble out of the priests or the other Levites. And the children of Israel shall pitch their tents, every man by his own camp, and every man by his own standard throughout their hosts. But the Levites shall pitch round about the tabernacle of testimony, that there be no wrath upon the congregation of the children of Israel. And the Levites shall keep the charge of the tabernacle of testimony. And the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so did they. Chapter 2. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard, with the ensign of their father's house, far off about the tabernacle of the congregation shall they pitch. So you had to encamp with your own tribe, your own family even, some distance away from the tabernacle and the ark, unless you were a Levite. And on the east side toward the rising of the sun shall they of the standard of the camp of Judah pitch throughout their armies. And Nashon, the son of Amminadab, shall be captain of the children of Judah. And his host and those that were numbered of them were 64,600. And then it goes through who's supposed to camp next to them and so on, all the way around the compass points. So I'm going to skip over all those verses except for verse 17, which says, then the tabernacle of the congregation shall set forward with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camp. As they encamp, so shall they set forward, every man in his place by their standards. So at this point, when they were on the move, the tabernacle and all its contents, including the ark, were in the middle of the pack so it would be protected. And later on, the ark would go in front. But at this point, apparently not. And then once again, it gives the grand spreadsheet total in verse 32. These are those which were numbered of the children of Israel by the house of their fathers. All those that were numbered of the camps throughout their hosts were 600,000 and 3,550. There's that number again. But the Levites were not numbered among the children of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses. And the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So they pitched by their standards, and so they set forward, every one after their families, according to the house of their fathers. And that's the end of chapter 2. Chapter 3 begins, these also are the generations of Aaron and Moses in the day that the Lord spake with Moses in Mount Sinai. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron, Nadab the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Now, Nadab and Abihu were the two that were killed for offering strange fire. Eleazar and Ithamar survived. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the priests which were anointed, whom he consecrated to minister in the priest's office. And Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered strange fire before the Lord. See, in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. And Eleazar and Ithamar ministered in the priest's office in the sight of Aaron their father. Now, when it says that Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord, that doesn't mean in time, obviously. Well, I guess it does. I could. But I think it means that they died in the presence of the Lord. You know, before the Lord, in the presence of the Lord, in the presence of Yahweh, you know, the head Yahwehlian his representative, the one that appeared in the mercy seat, whoever that was at the time, you know, the mercy seat atop the Ark of the Covenant, you could call the head Yahwehlian Yahweh, just as you could call the head Anunnaki Anu. That's highly appropriate. But if Anu was unavailable, or he had the day off, you know, Enlil or Enki or some other high-ranking Anunnaki could fill in for him. And that's the same thing for the Yahwehlians. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, bring the tribe of Levi near, and present them before Aaron the priest, that they may minister unto him. And they shall keep his charge, and the charge of the whole congregation before the tabernacle of the congregation, to do the service of the tabernacle. And they shall keep all the instruments of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the charge of the children of Israel, to do the service of the tabernacle. And thou shalt give the Levites unto Aaron and to his sons. They are wholly given unto him out of the children of Israel. And thou shalt appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall wait on their priest's office. And the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, and I, behold, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel, instead of all the firstborn that openeth the matrix among the children of Israel. Therefore the Levites shall be mine. So Lord Yahweh, the head Yahwehlian, is changing the rules in the middle of the game. You know, substituting the entire Levite tribe for the firstborn of all 12 tribes, you know, which he had previously stated were his property. Or they had previously stated were their property. It's probably a fair trade, and it's certainly less disturbing for the tribal mothers and fathers. Because all the firstborn are mine, for on the day that I smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I hallowed unto me all the firstborn in Israel, both man and beast. Mine shall they be, I am the Lord. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, number the children of Levi after the house of their fathers, by their families. Every male from a month old and upward shalt thou number them. And Moses numbered them according to the word of the Lord as he was commanded. And these were the sons of Levi by their names, Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And then it goes through all the sons of Gershon and all the sons of Kohath and all the sons of that other one, and tells us how many males there were in each branch of the tribe. Now, do you begin to see why this is called the Book of Numbers? And then starting in verse 23, it goes into where each branch of the Levite tribe should pitch their tents and what they were responsible for. Let's read a little bit of that. The families of the Gershonites shall pitch behind the tabernacle westward, and the chief of the house of the father of the Gershonites shall be Eliasaph, the son of Lael. And the charge of the sons of Gershon in the tabernacle of the congregation shall be the tabernacle and the tent. Thought the same thing. The covering thereof and the hanging for the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the hangings of the court and the curtain for the door of the court, which is by the tabernacle and by the altar round about. And the cords of it for all the service thereof. And then the Kohathites were instructed to pitch to the south of the tabernacle and told that they would be responsible for taking care of the ark and the holy coffee table and the holy candelabra, or holy candlestick, whatever I called it, and the altars and the vessels and the hangings and so on. And the Merari group was told to pitch to the north, and they were to be responsible for the boards and the bars and the pillars and the sockets and so on. And that takes care of the three branches of the tribe of Levi, but it leaves the eastern flank unprotected. So who encamps there? Well, verse 38 tells us, but those that encamp before the tabernacle toward the east, even before the tabernacle of the congregation eastward, shall be Moses and Aaron and his sons, keeping the charge of the sanctuary for the charge of the children of Israel. And the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. And presumably, it wouldn't be just Moses and Aaron and his two remaining sons that would capture them and put them to death. You know, Moses and Aaron were getting up in years. Presumably, the bodyguards of Moses and Aaron and so on must have camped with them and were responsible for keeping the strangers out. And I would imagine Moses and Aaron and maybe even Aaron's two remaining sons were strictly in a supervisory capacity, since it doesn't say that they were responsible for any items in particular. All that were numbered of the Levites, which Moses and Aaron numbered at the commandment of the Lord throughout their families, all the males from a month old and upward, were 22,000. And the Lord said unto Moses, number all the firstborn of the males of the children of Israel from a month old and upward, and take the number of their names. And thou shalt take the Levites for me, I am the Lord, instead of all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of all firstlings among the cattle of the children of Israel. So not only are they changing the deal for the humans, but for the animals as well. Because remember that in the King James Version, cattle refers to livestock in general, not just to cows. And Moses numbered, as the Lord commanded him, all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and all the firstborn males by the number of names, from a month old and upward, of those that were numbered of them, were 22,213. Numbers. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of their cattle, and the Levites shall be mine, I am the Lord. And for those that are to be redeemed of the 213 of the firstborn of the children of Israel, which are more than the Levites. See, that's the difference between the total number of the Levites and the total number of the firstborn of the other children of Israel. So just 273 different. And you would think they would just let that slide, you know. But no, there had to be an assessment made to make up the difference. Thou shalt even take 5 shekels apiece by the pole. After the shekel of the sanctuary shalt thou take them. The shekel is 20 gerahs. And thou shalt give the money wherewith the odd number of them is to be redeemed unto Aaron and to his sons. And Moses took the redemption money of them that were over and above them that were redeemed by the Levites. Of the firstborn of the children of Israel took he the money, 1,365 shekels, after the shekel of the sanctuary. And Moses gave the money of them that were redeemed unto Aaron and to his sons, according to the word of the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moses. That's the end of chapter 3. Chapter 4 begins, and the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, take the sum of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi, after their families, by the house of their fathers. From 30 years old and upward, even until 50 years old, all that enter into the host to do the work in the tabernacle of the congregation. This shall be the service of the sons of Kohath in the tabernacle of the congregation, about the most holy things. And when the camp setteth forward, Aaron shall come and his sons, and they shall take down the covering veil and cover the ark of testimony with it, and shall put thereon the covering of badger skins, and shall spread over it a cloth wholly of blue, and shall put in the staves thereof. But now, wait a minute. I thought the staves, or the poles, you know, were supposed to stay in the ark's rings all the time. But this makes it sound like that the ark would be sitting there without the poles in the rings until it was time to travel, and then they'd put them in. And I'm confused by that, because Exodus 25:15 had said that the staves must never be removed from the rings. Now, Ellicott's commentary, which I have found somewhat reliable, says that the poles would have to be removed in order to put the covering over the ark. But if they had to do that, what was the point of leaving them in at all other times? Because leaving them in was obviously a safety measure. They needed the wooden poles to stay inserted in the metal rings to provide insulation whenever they had to move the ark. Otherwise, they would risk electrocution. Now, the best explanation that I've seen is the one in another commentary, the Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary, which speculates that it's, instead of talking about putting in the poles through the rings, it's talking about putting the poles through holes in the cloth covering, you know, which would make sense because they're going to need to be able to carry the ark around with the covering on it, you know, like the show art depicts, although you can't really tell whether the poles are coming out through holes in the cloth covering or whether the covering is just draped over the poles. Still, you get the idea. Plus, you can see the vast array of tribes and sub-tribes we talked about earlier. You know, I was talking about where everybody had to camp and how they marched forward in the same order that they encamped, and they all marched under their own standard, whatever, banner maybe. And you can see them all marching under their own banners. Well, once again, we're about out of time, so I guess we'll just pick it up next time in Numbers 4, verse 7. Till then, keep the faith, stay well insulated, and carry on, if you know what I mean.